Section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
You are about to enter the dirty stalls of It Burns When I Pee. This podcast is for mature audiences only. The views and opinions expressed on this show are usually rude, crude, and offensive, and should not be associated with our guests and sponsors in any way. Please proceed to the first available stall and prepare for takeoff.
Welcome, everyone, to another gripping episode of It Burns When I Pee, the number one podcast for roots music, adult comedy, and interviews. The podcasting god, Blake Clayton, along with his revolving group of co-hosts, are preparing for launch. Please adjust your volume, remove all morals and values, and prepare yourself for what we like to call auditory dysentery. We go live in
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
Mission control to podcasting god, you are clear to proceed. I repeat, you are clear to proceed.
We should put an act together, call ourselves the Evil Ugly Twins. I'll do card tricks you can juggle, even do a song or two. We'll pick their pockets for the chorus in. We'll be bigger than Caruso, play it tight, I'll play it loose. So I don't see how we can't do so once we bring them in. Cause you're a little evil, I'm a little ugly. We are just the perfect pair, the marvelistic Evil Ugly Twins. Mother Mary couldn't love. Dogs bark as you halt by them and grin. And I have got a heart that even Mother Mary couldn't save. I laugh for lunch, for dinner I eat sin. Together we could scam the local city folks and all the yokels. And when they figure out Dan Broke, we'll hit the road again. So let's take the act to the people. They'll love it till they check their wallets. The marvelistic Evil Ugly Twins. Perhaps you think you have a conscience. Don't worry, friend, for that is where my certain set of wicked skills comes in. And if perhaps the day shall come that I will stab you in the back, well, pardon me, I don't wish to offend. But how can I put this delicately? You see, your face appears to be that which the dog would hide under the front porch. And for that reason, 2, 3, 4, to stab you in the front would be so horrible, I'm sure you see. So that face of yours is hard on me, so don't break it up again. Let's take the act to the people, will love it till they check their wallets. The marvelistic, evilistic, scandalistic, bellatristic, and somewhat sadistic Evil Ugly Twins.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the Dirty Stalls of It Burns When I Pee, and we have with us a longtime friend of ours, the one and only Lester T. Raw. Lester, how are you doing, buddy?
Finer than the hair on a frog.
Well, it's been a couple years since we had you on the show, and you got some new projects coming out, so we're going to talk about that tonight, and I got some other questions for you, so let's just bear down and get to them. How's that sound?
Yeah, let's dig in. It's going to be hard work, but damn it, we're good at it.
By the end of it, we'll both be crying. Like Barbara Walters.
Ah, mm-hmm. Oh, man, it's going to be one of those interviews. Damn.
So
the tissues behind.
Right, exactly. So you
just them all up earlier. We can get into that later.
right. I wonder how. All right. So you guys just got back from touring Europe. What are some of the favorite things for you going overseas, and what are a couple of things that you like the least?
Let's see. Well, actually, one of the best things, you know, the lovely Sparkle Obscura, my missus, she and I, we went out early, and we actually got to cruise around France for a little while. I spent 4 hours in the Louvre looking at ancient Egyptian stuff, which I'm kind of a geek for that kind of thing. So, you know, that was definitely a highlight. We did on that first day. We did all the tourist stuff on the first day we were there.
Sure.
And then, you know, so that's Eiffel Tower, did the boat trip on the Seine, did all of that stuff, got all of that out of the way. And the rest of the time, man, it was just eating good food, wandering around the cemeteries. I hit an open mic while I was out there.
Oh,
wow. I'm going to an open mic. I got my ukulele and my kazoo. Let's go get that open mic. And that was unbelievable because, you know, we went to this one open mic and the guy's like, oh man, you know what? My sound system's not working. And I canceled it for tonight. But, Sparkle, she gets on, you know, and starts, you know, with the magic of cellular iPhonics, finds another one over on the left bank. And she's like, let's go get to this one. I'm like, all right, fine. So we hop in a cab and we go on over the left bank and, beautiful club, tons of people there, and I'm like, oh man, and all the talent was good. I mean, everybody who got up there, I'm like, hey, this is a high quality open mic. So I get my slot. The guy, the two folks that get up before me, it's a singer, a lady singer, and this dude on guitar. Well, he's this Japanese guy with carefully manicured nails on his right hand, and he opens up his case and he pulls out this beautiful, beautiful flamenco style nylon string guitar. And anytime a Japanese guy opens up a case and pulls out something high end, he's going to be good at it.
Right.
You know how that goes, right? I'm like, crap, I got to go on after this guy. He starts warming up doing this badass flamenco stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, but when they launched into it, I mean, they were good. They were brilliant. But they were just doing some real standard, you know, they did the Girl from Ipanema, you know, sort of Brazilian jazz stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're a guitarist, you were geeking out to it, but everybody in the room just started talking like they'd all heard that stuff before. And I got up there and we get up there with the ukulele and the kazoo and everybody kind of stops and looks like, who is this guy? You know, and the fellow introduces me and my smattering of French. I gathered that he told the folks that I was, you know, American. That I guess they're like, all right, well, we'll listen to the big dumb guy with the kazoo. And I launched into some of the stuff off the new solo record, and then ended. Well, they called me back for an encore, and I ended with Pretty Little Girl and a solo version of that. And it slayed him. It was great. And, you know, all the people came with me afterwards, like, we really had no idea what we got up there. So that was just fun. Just, you know, picking that out of the blue. Just actually, it's really, you know, because we go over there to work. I mean, it's the first time I've really gone and just done the sightseeing.
Sure.
And all of that. Next day, we hop on a train to get to our friends up in the Netherlands, Rich and Steph, who are going to be staying at their house in Dongen. We had to ride on into Rotterdam, and on the train ride, we almost missed a train, you know, when we were making a connection, and you know, Sparkle, she's you know, we're rushing to get there, and Sparkle gets on one car, you know, with all his luggage, and I'm a little bit behind her, and I see this other open door, nobody's going in that way, and I get in there, and I've got all this space around me, space to drop the luggage, and then suddenly I hear this voice behind me, oh, and it's all the guys from Batmobile. They're good friends of ours. So, you know, so I'm like, well, guys, y'all sit with my stuff for a second. I'm going to go get Sparkle. And I go walking back to the car where she is. There she's like, you know, people all packed in around her. She's got her luggage sitting on her. She's got that exhausted, I hate life look. You know, I just act like it's no big deal. I'm like, don't worry, baby. I got some space back here. We can go on back there. And she's like, well, what do you mean you got space back there? I'm like, it's open. There's plenty of seats. And so where's your luggage? I'm like, oh, it's back there. Yeah. Eric and the, you know, Batmobile guys are watching it. It's like, Eric? And I'm like, yeah. The rest of the guys from Batmobile.
Awesome.
She's He's like, couldn't believe it. You know, we got back there. So sure enough, we get back there. We've got a car to ourselves, and, you know, the whiskey comes out pretty quick, and we're just, you know, passing the bottle and just laughing all the way into Breda. So they just got back from doing the Ink and Iron Festival. So, you know, so that was a real treat. And just getting to run around with the band, they came in the next day, and, you know, that's pretty much when the activities started again.
That's when it was, back to work, right?
Back to work, but, you know, all the shows were really, really good. The Jailbreak Festival was a lot of fun, because, you know, there we are in the 16th century prison. Which is a good place for the Pine Box Boys. They should have left us there, but they had, you know, while the bands weren't playing, the crowds were coming in to watch the music. But when the music was over, they were back out in the yard in front of the widescreen TV watching the Netherlands really put the screws to it when they were playing Spain.
Oh,
which,
okay.
You know, they won that game 5-1. So that's kind of fun being there while the Dutch were getting all excited, hauling up, you know, enjoying the World Cup. The Dutch variety show that we did, that was pretty hysterical. And probably the highlight, you know, was the fun that we had at Muddy Roots.
Right.
You know, Muddy Roots Europe was great. And, you know, because at this point we know the Dutch bands and the Belgian bands, and the German bands that are playing there. Of course, we know all the guys from the States too. And it was just, you know, I mean, it was less about the show and more just about the reunion.
Sure. And I've noticed that with every Muddy Roots, you know, it's 90% seeing everybody and, you know,
mm-hmm.
the rest of it's the music, but that's just like the icing on the cake. But it's always that community meeting up is what's really makes some of these festivals worthwhile.
And, you know, when you think about like that 10% of it that is the music, you know, the reason why you can say that that's 10% is because any of the musicians you see up there, when they're not playing, they're out there in the crowd,
right.
You know,
right.
And that's something about Muddy Roots, and that's something about Farm Fest, and maybe about whatever the scene is that we're all in, that might be the salient feature right there is the fact that, I don't know, it reminds me of, you know, the old punk scene, you know, I mean, the bands are there, yeah, but they don't really see themselves as that, you know, as being better than the audience.
Right.
They'll all stay in my green room, thank you. Can I have more M&Ms, Jeeves? You know, it's none of that crap. You know, everybody's out there with the crowd. That's the reason you're there.
So you've got two new projects out. You've got Lester T. Raw's Graveside Quartet, and you have the your solo record, Lonesome Lester T. Raw, coming out. So tell us a little bit about the difference between what you're going to hear, Pine Box Boys and Graveside Quartet.
Well, okay, all right. So the theme is basically the same. So if you have enjoyed the theme of the Pine Box Boys thus far, then this is going to be right up your alley. You know, for years people had asked for a children's album. And so Sparkle got me, what was it, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, she bought me a ukulele. And it was as if I had been looking for one my entire life. Immediately, you know, as I started playing it, just started writing a whole new set of songs. Now, you know how it works when you're a band, right? You know, if you went to a Motorhead show and they just played all new stuff, you wouldn't be into it. You'd be like, well come on, man, I still want to hear Ace of Spades,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so, you know, when you take the banjo away from your banjo picker and you give him an accordion and you set your guitar down and you pick up a ukulele and a kazoo, you've radically altered, you know, the expectations, you know, that your audience may have. So to me, it seemed like, let's just call it a new band, sure. You know, like the Pine Box Boys have an alter ego.
Right,
and
there
it's you go. Lester T. Raw's Graveside Quartet. When the album does come out, and we're looking for a mid-September release, when it does come out, it's going to have a sticker on it that says the unofficial fifth Pine Box Boys album. Because it's your Uncle Dodds, it's Possum, it's Colonel Leather, Jason Kleinberg playing fiddle on it, and, you know, so it's the same musicians. Nigel, you know, Beveo, who's done all of our produced our last couple of albums, he produced this one too. So it's the same team. The album's called Lester T. Ross Graveside Quartet Sings Your Children to Sleep. And it's you know, it's really for those parents that have been woefully neglectful because they've played Just a Crush for their children. Yeah, it's for those parents. it's not stuff you give that normal parents give normal children.
Right. You know, and it's funny, I'm just because you mentioned that, I'm going to lead into a question that I had a lot lower, just because, you know, when you talk about the children listening to Pine Box Boys. My 9-year-old son loves the album The Tales from the Emancipated Head. And two of his
that's my favorite one too.
Two of his favorite songs are, of course, Pretty Little Girl, and then also Live Brains. And I I posted a video of him singing Live Brains, and
yeah, I saw that.
One of your comments was that, you know, he was singing lead, you know, the backup vocals. He just wouldn't sing, you know, the rest of the people in the car have to sing that.
That's right. Yeah, that is cool of him.
So, just real quick, while we're on that, the Pretty Little Girl, what inspired you to write that song? I know that that whole album was kind of inspired by, you know, B movies and you know, your love for those types of movies. Was there a specific movie or a specific thing that kind of drew you to that song?
No, really, just the notion. You know, I mean, I've had some more feminist-minded audience members suggest that perhaps the men do a bit too much of the killing, and I certainly absolutely reject the notion of the innocence of children. So I thought, well, all right, let's just go ahead and you know, kill two birds with one stone here, and you know, like, all right, we're going to have the killing done by a little girl, and I don't know. I mean, it just, you know, it definitely kind of conforms to my view of of children, but which I think they're terribly sweet. I wouldn't turn my back on them for a second. You know, like Homer Simpson says, you know, when he's doing Krusty the Clown at little kids' parties, it's like, anytime that they look up to me with those eyes, I look into their little faces, I know they're about to poke me with something.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from with that one there. That, and, you know, when I write stuff, am I amusing myself? If so, then it's going to be a song. I hide the ones that don't go over well, but for the most part, you know, I've found fairly receptive ears to the stuff we do.
Sure. And hey, you know, if a 9-year-old gets enjoyment out of it and mm-hmm. and finds it, you know, catchy, you know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with playing that. He's 9. He's, you know, he's not going to grow up to, you know.
No, Blake, I'll tell you, it's weirder when I had a fellow come up to us at a show, and he told us that his 5-year-old son was singing Just a Crush at kindergarten. And the teacher was not too happy with it, and he had to explain, well, that's something that you and Daddy, we do in the truck, right. And nobody else gets to hear that song.
Sure.
You know, like, really? You're playing that one for your 5-year-old son? You probably let them play Resident Evil on the PS as well, aren't you? You know? But, hey, man, they're kids, you know, right. And fact is, the more of the you know, your parents out there that, and I say this to all the parents out there with kids, you know, you can either raise them up boring and singing all the soundtrack to Frozen, or you can let them listen to a Pine Box Boy album, and that'll do two things. One, that will ensure that your child seeks out alternative music when they get older.
Right.
And two, it'll, you know, give me a certain amount of job security.
Right.
Because, you know, the more young kids grow up, darn it, they'll turn 21 at some point. They'll be able to come see me.
Yep, you'll still be making record sales on those for generations to come, right? I'm just trying to help you out, Lester. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. Long, you know, after I'm dead, somebody will be raking in cash off of this stuff. Sure as hell isn't me.
So with the birth of the solo record and with the Graveside Quartet, does this mean the end of the Pine Box Boys, or is it just a, like you said, just different feel for some different songs that you had been writing?
It's really that. It's just the difference in feel on stuff. And, yeah, because, you know, like I was saying before, I mean, there's, you know, an audience has an expectation, you know, for a band to keep doing something. But, and it's not like, well, I like to think outside the Pine Box every once in a while. You know, you get to writing songs for just one project, and you kind of stop thinking about other instruments and other things that you might, you know, actually be able to use, and it also sometimes avoiding stuff that you find interesting, you know. With the solo record in particular, I mean, there's a, you know, it's a very different record from either of the other two projects. And there's a second track on there, just it just has one line in it, the, you know, which are to my hen I did beg, she gave to me misshapen eggs. And that whole collection song in there, those are the misshapen eggs that the musical chicken gave me. So, and that's why I put them all together. No reason to force those boys to have to play those songs. That being said, at least two of the solo shows I've done, I've had my acquaintances, right? Lonesome Lester and, but my acquaintances have come up on stage, and, you know, and of course it's the Pine Box.
Sure. So, as a writer, do you ever go through writer's block? I mean, you know, does it help to have different avenues, like projects you can do, but what do you do when you get writer's block? How do you get through it?
Like, the well's never dry, and I've never actually really suffered from writer's block. There may be spells where I'm not writing, but the instant that I, you know, I'm like, I feel like writing a new song, and I put my attention to it, you know, there's always something else waiting to come out. That, and I bet, you know, any of the other songwriters listening do the same thing. You know, you've got your little booklet that you write stuff down, and you might write a line someplace and then ignore it, and one day you're flipping through your book and looking at old ideas, and you're like, hey, wait a minute, I can do something with that line now, you know? And so you just kind of, you know, you plant seeds here and there, and that's just an ongoing process. So, yeah, it never feels like the well runs dry.
Have you ever...
Maybe that's the thing. For the people that are sitting there saying, like, darn it, I wanted Lester to tell me how to get over writer's block.
Right.
So the answer to that, keep that little book around. Always write down. Anytime something stupid or funny occurs to you, write it down. It doesn't have to become a song right then. It'll become one later on.
Sure. Okay. So, have you ever thought about incorporating your writing into other medias, like, you know, like books, or, you know, possibly like films or anything?
I've written a couple of screenplays. They're of uneven quality. One of the first ones I wrote was called "The Dead Are Flammable." It still makes me laugh. And even though there are zombies in it, it's not really about setting the dead on fire. It's awful. My other favorite one that I wrote is called "Carnival," and that's copywritten. Damn it, I wonder if you guys trying to steal that carnival, right? But the very first line of there is, you know, is a guy storming into a diner while everybody's sitting around eating pie, and, you know, when he comes in, I need a priest. You know, if you're any movie that starts off, you know, with not, you don't need a cops, you don't need help, you don't need a place to hide, you need a priest, means you did something really, really bad.
Really bad.
And that's what that one's about. You know, unless any of your listeners are, you know, film agents, I've got no idea what to do with those things. Somebody out there introduced me to Tim Burton.
There you go.
He needs a good script. I've watched his, you know, most recent stuff, and, you know, Frankenweenie was awful.
So Lester is going to come to the rescue. I'll have to work all my connections. I've got so many, you know, connections throughout the land that I can, you know.
Yeah, just spend some of that for me there. I'll cut you in. You're going to find your speed.
There you go. I can have one of those roles as one of those guys getting his head bit off or something, right?
why not?
There you go. So now let's go a little bit to the personal side of Lester.
Oh, this is where, all right, now we're getting Barbara Walters.
Well, not quite Barbara Walters, but so you reside in San Francisco, but you're originally from Virginia, I believe. What kind of led you? What was your path from Virginia to San Francisco in a nutshell?
Well, was born in Georgia, raised in Virginia and Arkansas, and met the lovely Sparkle. She's a Mississippi girl, and met her in Arkansas, and we got married and at a very young age. And there was a point the band that I played in out there, Cosmic Giggle Factory, broke up. The newspaper she was working at folded. And we were like, well, there's nothing holding us here. Let's go someplace. And it was really almost like throwing darts at a map. We started coming up with places. We thought, well, maybe that's cool. And then making a list and then come up with various reasons why we should check that place off the list or consider it as a place to move. San Francisco stuck. It won out. It sounded like, well, that'll be fun. So neither of us had ever even been there. So we got rid of everything we could, the guitars, the dog, the cat. We loaded them all up into the back of the Geo Prism. and we drove on out to good old sunny California, where the weather's always perfect and everybody's always in love.
What do you like most about living in San Francisco?
The fog. I love the fog. Cursed sunshine. I've got no use for the sunshine and all of its vitamin D. I love it when the fog comes rolling in the city. We just did a show up in Shasta, and we had rented a vehicle that had a lovely display in there that told me the temperature outside, and it was getting up to 108.
Ugh.
Up around there. Yeah. And all any of us could think about when we were driving home was, oh, ain't it going to be great to feel the fog? when I'm ready to go play some music, for the most part, I can walk out the door and maybe if I'm helping Dodge get his drums someplace, I might have to drive. But for the most part, I can walk to where I want to go play. I can walk to go hear the music I want to go hear. Walk out my door. I mean, you do everything like a pedestrian. And, distances that, like when I lived in Arkansas, shoot, man, you wouldn't walk two blocks to go to the convenience store. You'd go ahead and get in your car and drive over there. I drive to work, drive back, park it, and I don't touch the car again.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's a different way of life, isn't it?
Yeah, and, I should say, for anybody who's listening to that going like, wow, I'm going to move on out to San Francisco. I moved here in 1995, right before the dot-com boom. We have rent control in this city, so I got in, and I'm still paying basically 1997 rental prices. For living in San Francisco, I got it dirt cheap. So
those guys wanting to come now is not going to help them any.
It's kind of not. Rent is really ridiculous for folks moving in. After the dot-com bubble went pop, which up until that point, people would literally park on the sidewalks. Parking was so awful in my neighborhood that people were parking on the sidewalks. They were getting ticketed, of course, every time they did it. But, folks around there were thinking, well, I got stock options. I'm going to be kicking it with Steve Jobs and, Bill Gates in a little bit. I could pay for this. And when that money dried up, like, it dried up fast.
Wow.
I mean, it was gone. Suddenly, like, all these people, who've been in the city, they were moving out. I think, like, at the time, like, most of our apartment was furnished by stuff that we walked around and, bought off people, bought from people on the cheap. Because, they're like, oh, I got to move back to Texas or I got to move back to Missouri or wherever they were moving back to. But landlords got a taste of it. They didn't really let the rent drop much. And, now as it is, we're in another tech boom. And, you look around at the 20-somethings walking around this place, and they're making six figures.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not.
God, no. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to make six figures, you avoid playing music.
Right, or podcasting. So,
damn it, Blake, I was planning on doing a podcast.
Well,
I thought that was going to be the...
So did I.
The ad revenue alone.
So did I. 7 years ago, I thought, I'm in. But no,
yeah.
I still have an apartment, and I'm looking out at the camper that I'm going to make a payment on barely this month. So,
well, there you go. But that camper represents your freedom, doesn't it?
Exactly. I can go anywhere. I can go anywhere I want and still have air conditioning and heat.
Come on, baby. We're taking the kids to Burning Man.
Right. Exactly. So we've talked on Facebook before, and we both have boxers. And I was just curious as to, as a boxer owner, how do you describe their personalities?
Well, they're, you know, like some of my favorite comedians are the ones that that don't know that they're being funny. And that's what a boxer is.
Right.
They don't know that they're being funny all the time, but they can't help it. They are constantly hysterical. I mean, as you know, they can twist themselves up into a singularity. Like, you're really like if that dog twists up any more in excitement, it's right. going to create a black hole.
Right. I just keep waiting for her spine to just snap.
yeah. Like, one part of it's just going to, like, rupture out the back and go straight again because they do that kidney bean thing.
Right.
Such wonderful dogs, aren't they? I mean, the first one I had was a brindle boxer, and she was an amazing frisbee dog. I mean, just spectacular, just a true athlete. When we were playing, I'm, you know, it was like, you know, Steve Young and Jerry Rice. I mean, we were just, I guarantee, you know, cause we live right near Alamo Square with the Painted Ladies. You know, that dog appeared on, you know, for about 7 years was on, you know, most folks, vacation photos whenever they went up to Alamo Square. Cause I mean, tourists would just stand around and just photograph her and protective.
Sure.
I mean, she, you could break into the house. She wouldn't have cared.
Right.
You know, but if anybody dared to try to lay a hand on me or Sparkle, I mean, that dog was right there by your side, just as loyal as can be. They're
yeah.
just they're just the best dogs. The other girl that we had was Zilla. She passed away 2 years ago. So now I'm down to a French bulldog.
Oh, yep.
I
remember seeing the video on YouTube video when you first got her. I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, Judge Roy Bean. Mom was a Paul Newman fan, so I named him after a Paul Newman character. Well, Judge Roy Bean was a real figure. Texans, don't call me. I know there was a real Judge Roy Bean,
I
was introduced to him through Paul Newman.
I'll put your email address specifically for all those people.
Just to Texas.
Right. Only Texas people can email with complaints. So another question, I know that you have a great interest in magic, and I just wanted to know, what are some of your favorite magic tricks?
Let's see. You know, I mean, I've been working mostly with coins lately. And, you know, there's Shutagawa out there who just does stuff that's utterly impossible. So he's a guy that I spend a lot of time watching, and you know, I mean, I'll do the coin stuff for you and everything, but I mean, the card work and stuff, but coins are really what I kind of enjoy. Shoot, you know, I'll have to send you a video of a couple of tattoos that Jeff Lay did for me, which I have incorporated into a coin trick. He and I collaborated on that one.
Awesome.
There. But, you know, my two favorites, I mean, you know, I love Ricky Jay. He's an amazing magician. Of course, you know, anything that Penn and Teller do.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I, you know, so, you know, the Chris Angels of the world can, you know, can all hop in a bus and drive off a cliff together. I don't usually care for that stuff. It's a little bit too, you know, pretentious and, you know, I definitely like the more down and dirty stuff that like guys used to do in bar rooms. I love reading up on old con men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I like. I really love like bar bets and things like that. There's all sorts of stuff you can do that, some of it borders on magic. Some of it just borders on funny stuff you can do to people in a bar. Here's one. If you're listening, folks, do this. look at the person next to you and tell them that you can render them utterly immobile by just doing two things. And they'll be curious. They'll want to do it. And have them kind of get arms length from the bar and put their thumbs kind of side by side, put their thumbs maybe about 2 inches in between, put their thumbs on the bar. Now, they have to be at about arm's length. And once they've got them, their thumbs are sitting there, and they're waiting to see what you do. You take their beer glass, and you set it on top of their thumbs, and then you just walk away. And it's almost impossible. I haven't seen anybody get the beer glass off without somebody helping.
Nice.
That's not really magic right there, but,
sure.
It's silly, fun stuff to do with people in a bar. But I love reading up on the con men, guys. There's, have you ever tried to throw a peanut over a bar, over a roof, over a house?
Huh.
You can't do it, right? Because peanut doesn't have enough weight. I don't care how strong, I don't care if you're Tim Lincecum, you're not throwing a peanut over a house or over a bar. But there was a fellow that used to work in Chicago, and he'd go in and, start eating the peanuts out of the bowl and talk to the guy next to him and bet him $5. Well, I bet I can throw one of these over the bar. Well, I bet you can. I can do it before you can. Well, I bet I can do it. So I'm going to grab a handful of peanuts, go outside, start trying to chuck them over the bar. Well, the guy who had dared the fellow to the bet, he actually had in his pocket a couple of peanut shells that had ball bearings inside of them.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, he chucked him on over the bar, take his $5, go back in and buy another beer.
There you go. So if you could collaborate with anyone, either alive or dead, who would it be?
Shit, man. Now that's a wide open field there. Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
Nah, I don't know. I just that was the first name that popped in my head there. Frank. It'd have to be Zappa. I don't know that he'd have any interest in working with me, but that was, when I was a kid, I mean, that was the stuff that I listened to that made my little brain explode.
Oh, you there?
Oh, yeah, my battery suddenly started warning me that it's low.
All right, I'll edit that up. I lost you for a second, so we'll kind of finish it up here. And I'll use the power of audio editing.
You make it all good in post, okay?
Right. All right, Lester. Well, thank you for being on the show. The main question that everybody wants to know is how do they get their hands on these two new records, Lonesome Lester T. Raw and Lester T. Raw's Graveside Quartet?
Okay, so you want to get the Lonesome Lester T. Raw album and Arkansas. It will be up on the website in a couple of weeks, and it should be available very soon. Or if you're in San Francisco, you come see me at the Hotel Utah on July 18th, or you come see me with Good Luck Thrift Store Outfit at Great American Music Hall, but I can't remember the date right now. I'm really lousy at plugs. That's in September. Or you just keep watching through the website. And then the Graveside Quartet, like I said, that'll be up on the website in about the middle of September.
Awesome. Well, Lester, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. We can't make it 2 years. We can't make it 2 years in between times.
You're right.
You have to keep putting stuff out every year so you can be on the show.
Okay, well then that's it. You've become an official listener to all of my demos. As soon as I demo a song, I'll just send it to you. That'll raise the quality of your show a lot.
That'll work for me. All right, Lester, take care and congratulations on the two new albums.
Hey, thank you. And by the way, we just celebrated the 11th year of the Pine Box Boys, and we're going to celebrate that over there at Farm Fest.
Awesome.
Oh, by the way, I will have loads of Lester CDs at Farm Fest, so you guys can get those there too.
Cool. Thanks again, Lester.
Blake, thank you, man.
Horace was known to live all alone on the mountains where no one could see him. On the day he was born, rumors said he was formed so ugly his mother did flee him. He built a fire for light and sleep there at night with a lean-to for keeping the hounds in. TVA sent a man, said we're claiming this land. Pack your grip and clear off the mountain. He freed all his hounds and moved into town, and from there he moved to the city. His features were hidden in a scarf and some mittens, said I can take whatever they give me. Did stare at his shocking red hair and how he was wrapped like a mummy. The crowd formed a ring when he started to sing, and they filled up his hat with their money. They all loved his voice, but given the choice, they'd prefer songs a little more jolly. He looked at them all he could recall were songs a bit melancholy. He gathered his tips and the darkness did slip where he thought no one could find him. But a pretty young maid for a song she had paid, and to hear it she felt she must bind him. In the alley she found him with no one around him, said, sir, I gave you my money. It was me that was yelling to hear Barbary Ellen with your voice sweeter than honey. Horace did stir, looked up at her, his face no longer hidden. The moon was bright and in his face just right, from the maid came a shriek unbidden. Horace did croon by the light of the moon, and the maiden did silence her screaming. He seemed more fair the more she did stare, she thought perhaps she was dreaming. They arrived at the scene, those who heard the maid scream, righteous and ready and raging. When the men saw his face, they quickened their pace to hasten the rude monster's hanging. The maid did scream, to the men it did seem as though the fair maid was dying. She shouted, no, please let the man go, but by then his hands they were tying. With the rope on the tree, she gave up her plea. By then, the church bell was knelling. Before he did swing, he started to sing the song of poor Barbary Ellen.
Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or you're just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free site builder, and the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use the special coupon code Section8686, you'll save 25% off your web hosting packages. What do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs.